Hello and welcome back to Dogcast. I'm your host, Mary, and I'm here to continue exploring the possibility of introducing a support dog to my school. The insights shared by educators and experts have opened my eyes to the intricate process of training and integrating a dog into a school environment. And let's not forget the perspectives of the students themselves. Remember Glenmore Park Public School's Dog Squad members? Their commitment to understanding dog behaviour really struck me. It made me realise that successful dog-human partnerships rely on effective communication. In today's episode, you'll hear from Dylan, an original Dog Squad member, as he shares the valuable lessons he's learned from the school's trainer, Bridie. Through her guidance, Dylan's been able to develop a deeper understanding of the needs of Jellybean, Daisy, and Peanut. But Glenmore isn't the only school benefiting from the expertise of an accredited trainer in their dog program. You'll also hear from Vula Fakis, the principal at Winmalee High School in the Blue Mountains, one of her students, and Heather Craig, the owner of the school's support dog. And we'll circle back to dog behaviour expert Guy Hull, veterinarian Bronwyn Orr, and Sam O'Keefe from Guide Dogs New South Wales ACT, who's got some advice about incorporating socialisation techniques into a dog's training. Throughout this episode, all of my guests highlight the integral role that accredited trainers play in shaping the success of support dog programs within schools. So, without further ado, here's my conversation with Dylan.
Tell me more about your trainer, Bridie. What she taught you about being in Dog Squad and caring for the...
So, Bridie basically taught us how to understand the dog's body language, like what they're saying to us without actually saying it to us, and also taught us some tips about walking it and doing the training for it.
Can you give me some examples of the kind of body language that you notice in the dogs?
Well, when their tail's down and in their legs, that means that they're like nervous or scared or overwhelmed sometimes. And obviously if their tail's up and wagging, that means they're happy and feeling comfortable.
I noticed before you took Jellybean out for work today at the gate.
Yep.
You put a jacket on Jellybean. Yep. Can you tell me a bit about why?
That's basically just like us to say he's working, and if you ask us, you can pat him.
Okay. And do you notice a difference in Jellybean when Jellybean's wearing the jacket and when Jellybean's not wearing the jacket?
Yeah, so when he's wearing it, he's very like professional, knows what he's doing. But when he's not, he's just silly and fun.
Can you give me an example of when Jellybean's being professional? What kind of behaviours do you see?
He'll listen to us a lot more when he's in the jacket because he understands he's working, and he knows exactly what to do when like we want him to do it.
Was there anything that Bridie did to help you? Because it sounds like you're able to see the world almost through the eyes of the dog that you're with.
Yeah.
Is there anything that Bridie did to help you learn about that?
Just a lot of doing it over and over and again, just so that we get it and, like, understand what we're doing.
Talking to Dylan, I realised how crucial it is to set clear expectations for a dog's role. It's fascinating how something as simple as putting on a vest can serve as a clear indicator that it's time for a dog to work. I met another uniform-wearing school dog, Benny, at Winmalee High School. This poodle cross wears a bandana adorned with his name and the school's logo to signal when he's on duty. With more than 800 students and a bustling environment teeming with co-curricular activities, Benny has a full plate. He's at the school twice a week with his owner, Heather, who's one of the admin staff there. I had the opportunity to speak with Winmalee's principal, Vula, about the careful planning that went into integrating Benny into their classrooms, like gaining parental approval to greenlight the program and scheduling Benny and his trainer Leanne to be on the school grounds, when students weren't present, to educate staff and ensure a smooth implementation. Let's hear from Vula about how the idea for this program originated and the impact Benny has had on both students and staff.
The opportunity came up where we had a staff member who had a suitable dog who was willing to work with us. And so it was this idea that we'd had for a couple of years, and it just was the right time. We had contact with a trainer, You know, we felt we could fulfil the guidelines too, because we were mindful that there was preparation for the department, and everything fell into place to make a start this year.
So Benny's just started at the beginning of this year?
Yes, so we started the preparations last year. We did a parent survey and a student survey to see whether the support was there. It absolutely was. So that was terrific. And we needed time to prep our students, so teach them about the rules and the guidelines and what to do around the dogs, what you shouldn't do. So we held a school assembly with photos of the dogs and ran the whole school through the protocols.
Community. Are there any other things tips that you can give me about how to communicate with the school community and the parent community about having a dog in the school?
Sharing links with them around the benefits. So we didn't just send a survey link out with the questions. We actually gave some information about what support dogs can do, what the guidelines are, as well as just sharing ideas about how we planned to use it here, because there was some worry about dogs going straight into the classroom, some kids who are scared of dogs, and that's something that we've had to manage. So fear of dogs is probably the biggest barrier with only a few kids, but it's certainly there. Well, I think, when I talked before about all of the different aspects aligning, we knew that Benny was going to be well suited. Oh, he's very welcoming. So he's excited to be here when he first arrives at school. He'll visit everyone in the front office. Staff members will come in to sign on and they'll make a point of greeting Benny. So staff wellbeing is a huge component of it. And then you'll have students who come up especially on Benny's days to say hello. And then he'll sit in my office when I've got meetings. He'll make a point of introducing himself to everyone who comes into the office space. He'll go up, sit next to them, seek a pat. He will just rest in the front office foyer. He'll keep kids company when they're in sick bay. So he's really attentive and a kind dog who showers kids with a little bit of attention. It's lovely. Yeah, definitely. I look forward to the days that Benny is here, and he'll help himself in here and sit on a chair and just sit with me while I'm doing work. It's great.
Have you've worked with a trainer for Benny?
Yes. We have a trainer, Leanne, who's been marvellous. So before we introduced the dogs, we had them come to the school and do a bit of familiarisation and get used to the spaces when students weren't around. And then Leanne came in on a school development day where we didn't have students here, and it was leading up to the holidays, and what she focused on was things that the owners could do to prepare the dogs for when students would be here, making sounds, getting them used to loud noises, unpredictable time frames. So really great advice for how we could prepare the dogs to face the challenges of the day. And we introduced it very, very slowly, very thoroughly.
Trainer Leanne also works closely with Benny's owner, Heather. Since I work at a performing arts school, I was really interested to learn that Heather takes Benny along to vocal rehearsals, where he sits by her side at the piano and listens along. The loud music doesn't seem to bother Benny at all, and unsurprisingly, the students love having him there. One of those students is Billy, who shares that Benny's calming presence works wonders in easing some of that Year 12 pressure.
I'm in Year 12 this year, so a lot of stress with HSC and just exams everywhere and all the musical stuff that I'm in. So Benny comes along to vocal group each week because Miss Craig plays the piano for us. And whenever he comes into the room, just everyone's so happy to see him. It's a Monday afternoon, everyone's a little bit tired, so we're all got, low energy levels. But whenever Benny walks into the room, everyone's all chirpy and everyone's like, "Hi, Benny." And he just brings a positive, calming energy to the room that just, it helps us collaborate and it helps us, just relax and have a good time with each other. Yeah. And I know personally for me, whenever I walk into school and I'm feeling a little bit on edge or anxious, when I see Benny, I always get excited knowing that, he's a dog. He doesn't really see people the way that other people see people, if you know what I mean. Like, he loves everyone, and he just, you know, it's just calming to see him and just reassuring to know that there's a dog there that loves you for who you are.
Yeah, the world through a dog's eyes is a better world, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah. Yes. And he's just amazing, and just the presence and the calming energy he brings to the school is just something that, I don't know, it's amazing.
So you're going off to play some piano
now? Yes, very soon, yes.
Would you mind if we were to come along and bring Benny?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that would be so fun.
Where's Benny? Oh, there he is. Hello.
Benny is so loved and adored. Heather must be such a proud parent. I had a chat with Heather to get her take on what it's like sharing her dog with the entire school community.
So he's our dog at home. We look after him. We pay for his care. He's our family pet. Only recently the school paid for some treats to have here. They're just special treats to help work on that situation when the girl comes to meet Benny and have a bit of a play with him. So when he comes to school, I put on his bandana just before I leave home. He knows it's time to come to work, and he's very excitedly led down to the office foyer area with his lead on, and he excitedly runs in and greets everyone. Various staff members are very excited to see him. They pat him, he lies down for a tummy rub, and I put out his mat, which is sort of his safe space for the day. He knows he's here for the day, and he lies on his mat near me or goes to see kids in sick bay, greets the visitors as they arrive in the foyer, is very interested in whoever is nibbling something at the time, but generally just very happy to be around people for the day.
My conversations really highlighted the importance of professional guidance. Sam from Guide Dogs agrees that having an accredited trainer on board is crucial for ensuring a smooth transition for the dog into the school routine. There are also socialisation tactics to consider, especially if the dog is introduced as a puppy, a topic I discussed with Sam as well.
So if I have a pup myself, that I'd like to use as a school support dog, what kinds of things would I need to do with that pup early on?
Early on would be definitely things like puppy preschool, really good positive socialisation. And socialisation isn't just I'm going to go and pop my dog in a group of dogs at the dog park. That's not socialisation. It's creating positive experiences for the dog with all different sorts of environments. If you've got an opportunity to get the dog around schools, maybe at a bit of a younger age it might help. It could work against you though if the dog has a negative experience. I'd say with pups though, I mean, you can definitely see what characters they've got as pups, but you really don't know what you're working with until they're, you know, more so reaching that adult stage of life to see what they're really comfortable with.
And why would it be important for me to work with an accredited dog trainer?
So they'll teach you how to manage a dog and read the dog. Accredited dog trainers too should have a really good understanding of laws and health of the dog, and they should be able to educate you in all the ways that you can, you know, really look after your dog. And if that's your purpose, to take the dog to a school environment, they can help you work towards that.
And how could I take advantage of maybe getting an accredited dog trainer to come in and monitor the dog in my school? And see how they're coping in the school.
For the most part, I think most people have a bias towards their dogs and might not see all the things that they might not be as desirable. A good accredited trainer will be looking at the welfare of the dog and the suitability to the role above everything else.
And if something does happen where my dog starts to show negative behaviours in school, what should I do?
I would absolutely employ a accredited dog trainer or a behaviourist, depending on the behaviour that the dog's displaying. Things can go pear-shaped quite quickly. You really need to find out the motivation for that behaviour with the dog and get to the bottom of it.
Of course, I don't want things to go pear-shaped, so I asked Guy for some advice on how to keep everything sailing smoothly. He pointed out that dogs thrive on positive reinforcement and, interestingly enough, they value their personal space just like us. Let's hear what Guy has to say about building a strong partnership with a school support dog.
I understand the behaviour and I understand about Fluffy's personal space. That she's entitled to that, the same as everyone else is entitled to that. I always maintain that behaviour is simple and training is quite simple too. What we've got to do is make it a really pleasant experience and you just set that dog up to win. You just got to set them up to win all the time. So long as the dog's personal space is observed, there's never going to be a problem. If everyone behaves around the dog properly, there will never be a problem with the dog. And providing the dog's kept under effective control and attached to you where the dog feels nice and safe. If it's your dog, Mary, you know you need to raise your dog. So it's being raised to fulfill a job. And therefore, you make sure that dog is socialised and generalised in all different circumstances. And it's introduced early with smaller children. Like small children, when it's a puppy, can only pet it when they're sitting down. So they can't pick it up and drop it and all those kinds of things. Always under supervision. Children are the biggest wreckers of dogs. You need to be proactive and observant. So you need your dog to be in a situation where you can get away by just positive reinforcing the dog all the time, okay? So rather than punish a dog for things that it does wrong, prevent those things from happening in the first place, or if Fluffy starts to develop a silly habit, offer her a better alternative. Say, look, instead of jumping on me, if you sit down, I'm going to give you a little treat.
Guy mentioned using food as a training aid to encourage and reward good behaviour. As a teacher, my thoughts immediately turned to housekeeping. How do I manage the dog's intake and health with so many potential treat givers around? And let's not forget about the countless lunch boxes that could easily become treasure chests for hungry dogs. So I turned to Sam for some answers.
If I'm using food as a kind of a reward, who should be feeding the dog in my school?
Generally, what we suggest is that the primary carer of the dog is the person that's responsible for feeding and rewarding the dog in the school environment. So there's a couple of reasons for that, particularly with our dogs. Labradors are renowned for having insatiable appetites. If everybody fed the dog would quickly become very unhealthy and obese. It's also for safety of the dog. If we've got kids trying to feed the dog chocolate or grapes or things that make dogs very unwell and can even kill them, you run a really high risk of that happening to the dog. Also, we don't want the dog scavenging. So we don't want the dog going to garbage bins, you know, looking on the ground for food, diving through kids' school bags after their lunches. So the more control we have around who delivers the food to the dog, the healthier the dog's going to be, the better their weight's going to be maintained and the less risk there is for the dog to become unwell.
Designating one person as the feeder made total sense. But when it comes to rewards and positive reinforcement, what if my dog is motivated by other things, like a game of fetch or a walk? I got some advice about this from Bronwyn, director at the Australian Veterinary Association, who we met in the last episode.
Some dogs are motivated by food, but other dogs are actually motivated by play. So the way that you train them would be you would reward them with a toy or a game of fetch. So you have to find what motivates your dog. If your dog is motivated by food, that's great. It makes it really easy to train them, but you have to make sure you don't overfeed them. That will be a piece of work, obviously, to make sure that students don't overfeed them. Also, you can train dogs to only eat on certain cues so that they won't just pick up food that might be left on the ground. But I think the big thing is just making sure everyone knows that, you know, Fluffy or, you know, whatever your dog's name is, they are only fed this kibble that's in this bag and that's all they get for the day.
As I delved into the training methods, I came across the term resource guarding, also known as possessive aggression. One approach to address this behaviour is employing treats as positive reinforcement. I wanted to understand more, so I asked Sam to explain what exactly resource guarding is and why it's a concern in a school environment, particularly in terms of interactions between students and support dogs.
Guarding something that is of high value. And so we have to make sure that with our dogs that if they have a toy that's really high value, that we can go and do a swap. We can ask them to drop the toy. Here you go, you have a piece of kibble for that. I'm going to take your toy off you. We shouldn't really be taking things off dogs all the time, but we should be able to be quite trustworthy that you can take things off them. Resource guarding is when a dog finds something really high value, it might be a bit unhappy about somebody or something else taking that off them. So when we place dogs with schools, we have the primary handler, who is usually like a principal, or they might be a librarian, somebody who works in the wellness hub. So we place the dog with them in their home, and we encourage them to develop a bond with the dog. And then we'll go and visit that person first day that it attends school with the dog.
An important takeaway here is that a successful program isn't solely about training the dog. It also involves preparing the handler and the entire school community. Now, how do I gather everyone's support? And on top of that, how can we create a calm and secure environment at a performing arts school like mine, where the noise and stimulation levels might be overwhelming? Benny at Winmalee High School sits with students as they play musical instruments, so I know that with the right approach, dogs can navigate even the most stimulating settings. According to Sam, the key is recognising the individual needs of the dog.
So I'm thinking about getting a dog, and I'm in a performing arts high school. So one of the things that's happening all the time in my school is that there are musical instruments playing, sometimes very loudly. There are students playing drums. There are students acting out scenes sometimes where there's fighting on stage, mm-hmm. stage fighting. What kinds of things could I do to make sure that my dog's okay with that?
I'd say slow exposure at first and ensure that the dog's not displaying any signs of stress. Trying to pair that experience with something really positive for the dog. You are probably a little bit at the mercy of the dog's biology and underlying temperament as to whether they're happy to tolerate that kind of noise or movement or the fighting, which they wouldn't be able to kind of determine whether that was real or not. So anything yelling and like anything that looks like physical violence, the dog is probably going to potentially get a little bit worried about. You might have to remove the dog from that area when you're making a lot of noise, but it's all about learning the dog, understanding stress signs are, and trying to pair these experiences with something positive so the dog sees it as, you know, something fun. Make sure that the dog has a place to settle, make sure that they're reading the dog's stress signs really clearly. And then we also do additional training with any volunteers or students or staff that might have hands-on with the dog a lot. And a big portion of that training is again, reiterating stress signs, how to manage it. We have red, amber, green zones. We always want the dog in the green zone. If it shifts to the yellow zone, here's what we need to do, which is usually just redirecting and moving the dog out of the space until it comes back down to green zone. So a lot of emphasis is placed on dogs training, but it's actually a partnership. You have to be aware of what the dog's doing, what their needs are, because it wouldn't matter what all the training in the world, it's going to come undone if the human part of it isn't aware of how to manage a dog. For most school dogs that we place, we try and make sure that they're quite sound in across the board. So there's no noise sensitivity, you know, like bells, closing doors, that they're okay with that, that they're okay with being handled and touched. Some dogs actually find that quite unpleasant, being patted by a lot of people. It's really important to be aware of those, because you can turn a previously really happy dog that loved doing its job into a dog that's doing it under duress. And so you've got to keep that kind of emotional teacup full for them so they can do their job.
I like that idea of keeping the dog's emotional cup full. From Guy's advice on personal space to Sam's tips on food management, it's pretty clear that a happy dog is the outcome of teamwork and coordination. The entire school community needs to come together, ensuring the dog's interactions, well-being and routines are well balanced, similar to how you would care for your own pet. Just that in the school environment, there's a bit more to consider and a dog has a bit more to contend with. Bustling corridors, ringing bells, lively classrooms, and the high energy of hundreds of young kids. During my research, I found some interesting facts about dogs' sensory capabilities. Their sense of smell, for instance, is estimated to be 10,000 to 100,000 times more potent than ours. Their finely tuned ears can detect high notes that we can't. And their eyes? Well, they've got panoramic vision of around 240 degrees compared to our 180, making them sensitive to sudden movements. So we must remember to consider the dog's unique sensory world. What they smell, hear, and see might significantly differ from our own perceptions. Join me in the next episode as I uncover the practicalities of integrating a support dog into the lively daily rhythm of a school.